Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Fitness Solution. It's January, it's the start of 2021, and I thought I'd do something very different for today's episode. Normally on The Fitness Solution, if this is the first one you've listened to, normally on The Fitness Solution, it'll be stories of clients I work with, and I'll have them on and we'll have a good old chat, or it might be I have a guest on like Jordan Syatt or Mike Matthews, or one that's coming up is Brooke Madigan. But as it's the new year, and as it's a big change in my life at the moment, as you're going to find out about, I wanted to just give you kind of, for want of a better term, my story. Now, I always think like these kinds of podcasts, I always think in my head, they come across as a bit self-indulgent. And when I was at drama school, I was always taught to not be self-indulgent. We was always taught to not emote, but to always do, to always be in forward motion when on stage, because that's what creates stories and that's what you want. You want that drama and you want people to be engaged in the actions of your character rather than the emotions of your character. And I've always found these kinds of podcasts in my subjective mind to be quite indulgent. I've always thought if I just spend 20 minutes talking to my audience about me and who I am, then they're not really going to enjoy it very much because I'm not that important to them. What I'd prefer to do is educate them, give them some insight, make them think. And I always thought my story was irrelevant to being able to do that until I came across someone else's version of their story. Brooke, who is coming up next week on the podcast. And it really inspired me. And I thought, as I was listening to her talk about what she's been through, talk about how she came to fitness and personal training and things like that, I thought, well, what better time than now, as my life has gone through one of the biggest sea changes it will ever go through. And there is no better time than now to just talk about who I am, what I do, why I'm here, how I got here, and everything else. So if you're interested, even slightly interested, I hope you will enjoy what I have to say today. Firstly, look, thanks for being here. I can't do my job without people like you, without, you know, the support from my friends, my family, and people who listen to this. And I always carry a great sense of pride around that I do have an audience. I do have people I can talk to, and I have people who trust me, people who like me enough to listen and enjoy my advice. And that means an awful lot. So if you're one of those people, then I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for being you, for being here, because without that, I wouldn't be me. I wouldn't be able to do what I do. I wouldn't be able to help you in the way that I can help you. I wouldn't be able to hopefully just, even if I improve your life a little bit, I wouldn't be able to do that without you allowing me to. So thank you so much for that. I just wanted to get that out of the way. So I suppose I better start at the beginning. And I know most people probably think that the beginning of their journey is probably like, so this is another thing. Because a lot of people, when they do these stories, they've like got a huge weight loss story. Like they overcame something incredible in their lives, and they, just for an example, they weighed a fair amount and then they managed to lose it. They figured out how to do it in the best way possible. And through that journey, they figured out how to help people. That's a very regular path for someone to become a personal trainer. Or it could be they've overcome binge eating, or they've overcome, I don't know, stuff like that, like their own personal struggle. Now, my personal struggle, I was completely unaware of. My personal struggle was something that I was born with. It was something that I had no control over, that it wasn't a situation I was even aware of because I was a baby. Literally now, as I'm telling you about this, I've come to realize that that's my personal struggle that I've carried with me all of my life. And that's what's made me who I am. Of course it is. And it is like a weight loss story, like a huge weight loss story, because it's driven me to be who I am. It's driven me to look after myself because of what it is. So if you don't know, you probably know what I'm talking about now if you know me. If you don't know, I was born with a congenital heart disease called pulmonary stenosis, which means that one of my valves doesn't quite work properly, and I had a blocked artery when I was born. The pulmonary artery, which is quite an important one because it's the one that takes blood, it takes blood from the heart to the lungs. And it gets oxygenated on the way through. And so kind of couldn't breathe. I was kind of like suffocating from the inside, I suppose. So when I was born, they found it immediately. They dealt with it pretty swiftly. And when I was about, I don't know, maybe like 9 months old, maybe a little bit older, I had to undergo open heart surgery. And I have a scar. Let me get out for you, for those who are watching on TV. those who are watching on YouTube. As you can see, I've got a scar that runs all the way down from my chest, from kind of like where my clavicle meets at the top. And it goes past my nipples all the way down to like my solar plexus, kind of like where the ribs meet at the bottom. It's literally the length of my sternum. And I have scars on my wrists and in my groin and my armpits, all from the operations that I had to go through when I was a baby. Now, I had no understanding until recently that it had that big an effect on me, right? And as a kid, I was just a normal kid, enjoyed playing, enjoyed eating sweets, enjoyed going to school, sort of, and things like that, really. And I've always been very philosophical about my heart condition. I mean, my parents tell this story. Every time they start talking about it, it all kind of blurs in my mind, and I'm still not 100% sure what happened, but then I don't think I ever will be, because I have no memory of it myself. And the things that come out from me when I hear my parents talk about it, and other people in my life talk about what I went through, and they talk about it like I'm some hero, like it was amazing what happened and how well I recovered from it all and everything else. And I'm like, I can't take credit for it because I had no responsibility for it. I was just a baby. I was literally a babe in arms, innocent person that had no power, no strength, no will, other than whatever I happened to have on that day to be able to get through it. And that's really what's guided me all of my life. So my parents had to sign a waiver at the hospital that said if they're unable to restart my heart once they'd operated on it, that they wouldn't sue the hospital, that it was just, you know, one of the perils of being operated on, and it's one of the risks of the surgery. And I've also, in my life, I have to keep going to Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital in London to have checkups and stuff. And sometimes when I'm there, I come across other people with my condition, and they're not in such a fortunate position as I am. Like, the condition has affected them far more severely than it's affected me. And that's very humbling. And so all of my life, I've wondered, why me? And what I mean by that is my parents are quite religious. My dad preaches at a church. He's not a preacher, but he preaches at a church. My mum's gone to church all of her life, and they're deep-seated Christians, and they have really strong faith and belief. And it's really, when I was growing up, it was a bit of a pain in the backside, if I'm being honest. I often say I grew up in the church. Like, I couldn't play football on Sundays, even though I really wanted to, with all my mates, because we had to go to church. And to me, it kind of felt like church got in the way quite a lot. But church also gave me a lot. It gave me some great friends. It gave me an understanding of the world that an understanding of the way in which my parents see the world, which therefore made a lot of things in my life make a lot more sense, which was handy because I wasn't at odds with my parents. I wasn't fighting with them. So I often say I grew up in the church, and within that, I'm a firm believer in fate. I believe that we are all here on a path, and I firmly believe that we have a duty that we have to fulfill, but we don't know what it is, and what will be of ourselves in our lives. And I, all my life, I've had this sense of fate, of I am here on this planet to do something. And that relates back to the fact that I survived heart surgery when I was a child, when I was a baby. I don't know why God kept, well, I suppose I'm always searching for the answer as to why God kept me alive. And whether you believe in God or not, like, that's fine. I'm not trying to preach to you. I'm not trying to convert you or anything like that. Like, I 100,000% respect everyone and their beliefs and who they are and how they believe the world goes round. But this is my own personal feelings on it. And I've always felt like there's a reason for me to be here. And that reason has to be a very unselfish reason, because God kept me alive, because I didn't die on the operating table. And then if I was to be given such a chance in my life, and if I was to then abuse that chance and behave selfishly, behave irresponsibly, behave neglectfully of others and treat people with disdain and be greedy and selfish and all these things. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not perfect. I'm far from perfect. But I always try to live up to these ideals. And by doing that, I firmly, strongly, honestly believe that's what I have to do, because I owe that to God. I owe that to the world, and I owe that to my life. Because I was fortunate. And that is really where I come from, where the gym starter is from, who I am and what I've done. So I don't know when I had this realization about who I was and about my life. I think it coincided around probably like my early teens, because I've not always been a personal trainer, believe it or not. I am a fully trained professional classical actor. And when I was about 14, my mother, a couple of my friends at school, they went to this stage school in my local area. And they wanted me to go along. I don't know why they chose me, because to be fair, I wasn't even like really close friends with these guys, but they seemed to really enjoy it and it seemed fun. And it was on a Saturday morning, not a Sunday morning, so I knew I could go. Because it wouldn't get in the way of church. And I always kind of enjoyed just having fun, say. So my mum agreed to take me, because believe it or not, she didn't like the way I speak. Now, how I speak now is very different. I'm from a place called Essex in London. I'm from a place called Essex, which is East London. It's kind of like the far east of London and then further out. And we have a very typical accent in Essex, which is known as the Estuary accent. And people kind of talk like that, you know, it's like, it's really loose and no one really cares. And you instead of THs, it's Fs. So it's I thought she did something, I do, you know, it's like that. And they kind of don't pronounce their T's, they don't pronounce their I's. It's all just really loose and really horrible, isn't it? If you've ever seen Gavin and Stacey, it's that accent, like the Gavin accent. It's Billy Ricky. It's like EastEnders. Yeah. Ricky and all of that. It's an accent that makes me just cringe. So because I used to speak like that, my mother sent me off to this stage school once a week, every Saturday morning. We had to sing, dance and act. And she basically agreed to only pay the £54 a month for 3 hours on a Saturday morning, because she thought it might help me learn how to speak a bit better in it. And I'm not sure if it did when I was there, to be honest, because, you know, they were all from Essex as well, but it was a fun place to be. It was a theatre school. And when I got there, I found out I couldn't sing or dance at all. And I still can't. Like, singing and dancing is not something I'm very good at, but I could act. I just had this knack for acting. I don't know what it was. I wasn't particularly funny. I wasn't particularly tragic. I just could do it. And there was something about me and about the way I responded to my drama teacher and the way I responded to the drama classes and the way I responded to doing it that just sat right for me. And from about, probably like from about 15 onwards, so here in the, well, not here, I'm in Australia now, but in the UK, we had to choose what we wanted to do at the age of 14, like for high school, for our GCSEs, they're called. And it was about this point in my life that I was becoming an actor. Come hell or high water. I'd been on a couple of film sets at this point, so I was in About a Boy, I also was in an ITV film called Goodbye Mr. Chips with Martin Clunes, and I'd been on the set of EastEnders. Not EastEnders, what am I talking about? That's me going back to Essex. I was on the set of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and I was in that film as well. And so I knew around my GCSEs that I was becoming an actor. I was going to be an actor. And then every decision I made, and when I say every decision I made, I mean every single decision I made was about becoming an actor. I was so headstrong in my faith that I was going to become an actor that I'd refuse to go on holidays. I'd be reading books all the time. I wouldn't do sport. I like everything. I wouldn't dye my hair funny colors. I lost a lot of my childhood, I suppose you could argue, or definitely my late teenage years, to my slavishness of becoming an actor. And the reason I got so headstrong about it was twofold. One was, you gotta be. Like, you wanna be an actor, it's a brutal business, and you've gotta be sure about it, and you have to be sure in yourself about it. And if you're not, if there's a single chink in your armor, if there's a single doubt in your mind, and you get a knockback, it's going to hurt a lot, and it's gonna knock you off kilter, and it's going to really seriously affect your ability and your desire to succeed. So I was not willing to allow that to happen. And the other reason I started to become an actor, and I really wanted to become an actor, was because I thought it was how I could serve the world. Going back to my heart and going back to my fate and going back to who I was and why I survived heart surgery, I thought my path and my truth for this life was to entertain people, was to allow people to enjoy my work or hate my work. I used to always say, like, I used to say to people, I don't care. Like, if you come and watch me on stage, I don't care. Like, if you love it, fantastic. If you hate it, fantastic. I don't care. And the reason I don't care is because someone's going to get enjoyment out of it no matter what. If they didn't like what I did, they were going to enjoy slating it. And if they did enjoy what I did, they enjoyed what I did. And there is a win-win situation for us all. So then at 18, 16, 17, I got into the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art and did some work for them there on a Saturday morning class with them. And then I was also at the National Youth Theatre, and I worked with Matt Smith, who went on to play Doctor Who, and now a famous comedian in the UK called Tom Allen. He was there as well. And I made a few very good friends. One very, very good friend at National Youth Theatre, Hannah, if you're listening. She willingly helped me a lot on my path to becoming an actor, because at this point, no one was stopping me. I was a freight train of acting, because I felt like it was my destiny. And I remember talking to Hannah once on the way home, because when we went to National Youth Theatre, we had to stay away from home for 2 weeks. So we was living in Belsize Park, which is North London. And she was talking to me about, you know, what are you going to do? Because it was just as we was like coming up to going to university. And I said to her, I'm going to go to drama school. And she went, oh, really? She was like, do you know how hard it is to get in? I was like, yeah. And she was like, what if you don't get in? And I just said, well, if I don't, I'll jump off the nearest building I can find. And it took her aback a little bit. And when I said it, I was deadly serious. Looking back in hindsight, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have done it. But I was pretty committed to the idea of there is no other option for me. I said to her, I might not jump off a building, but I'll go and join the Merchant Navy. Like, there was no other option for me. It was drama school or nothing. And I wasn't willing to embrace nothing. And I just believed it was my fate to become an actor. So that was National Youth Theatre. And then I auditioned for drama school at 18. Now, drama school in the UK, especially when I went, was really, well, it still is, very difficult to get into. There's 11 schools that do a degree in acting. And I had to get a degree. I wasn't willing to go to a drama school that doesn't give out degrees in acting. Not drama, in acting. And they're harder to get into than Oxbridge. The school I went to, there was 30 places, and I think there was something ridiculous, like 8,000 applicants or 5,000 applicants. It's a ridiculous amount. The competition is huge. And as an 18-year-old, I got in, and that's quite rare. It's quite an achievement. And there was a few 18-year-olds in my year, which is great, and they're all lovely people, and they're all doing fantastic work, wherever they all are now. And it's fun, and I got into drama school. And then, like, so every hurdle that was put up against me with acting, I jumped through and I got through, and that's why I believed I was on the right path. And this path was all because of my fate, to help people, to let them entertain me. I came across this quote, which was attributed to Shakespeare, but it turns out he never actually said it. But it kind of summed up how I felt about my fate as an actor. And it was, love me or hate me, both are in my favor. If you love me, I'll always be in your heart. If you hate me, I'll always be in your mind. And that's all I was setting out to achieve, because I was always hoping that I'd be giving people some form of pleasure. So, yep, got into drama school, had the best 3 years of my life. Drama school was just the most phenomenal place. The amount of stuff I learned, the amount of coaching I went through, it completely changed my life. It changed the way I talk, as you can hear. And it was just incredible. It was competitive. It was hard. It was intense. We used to do 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. It was physical. I didn't have to write a single word to get my degree. And I came out of one of the most prestigious drama schools in the country, called the Drama Centre London, with a degree in acting, an agent, and I had a career as an actor. And my career as an actor is still ongoing. And I've been on stage in the West End. I've been in films. I've been in TV. And it's fun. It's really fun. But it doesn't pay a lot. And it was getting to a point, I was doing like a day job in the Excel Centre for a catering company. And I was kind of getting more and more sucked into that. And my acting was fine, but it's not overly forthcoming for someone who looks like me, apparently. And after a few battles, losing a couple of agents, gaining a couple of agents, and, you know, picking up jobs, but it wasn't very regular, I was just like, I've got to do something different. And by this point, I'd also become a semi-professional football referee, which was fun. And the only reason I did that was because I was like, I love football anyway. I was like, I can get paid and I can keep fit. So sounds like the ideal plan. And I just needed something. I felt like I was starting to die. I was starting to rot a little bit. And above all, I was losing the sense of who I was. I was losing, like, the fate that had been driving me forward throughout my life. I felt like I wasn't living up to it, and that's not good enough. And so I decided to enroll in a personal trainer course. I always liked the idea of becoming a personal trainer, because I always thought I'd be very good at coaching people. I've always enjoyed listening to people. I've always enjoyed helping people. And I've always enjoyed just talking and offering advice and trying to help people in the best way possible, however I can. And people used to always comment when I was growing up, like, you're really good at listening. You're really good at this. You're really good at that. And, you know, and it's just something that's always lived with me. And going through drama school helped immensely with that, because it gave you a great understanding of humanity. Pretty much, to be an actor, you have to understand human behavior. And that's a very crucial part of how I work with people now. So I went on from there and went to personal trainer school. Now, I was very personal trainer school. It's not really. It's like a course in a gym. That was, looking back on it, it was awful. But I was very nervous. I was very scared. I was very worried, because I don't look like your personal trainer. I don't really have big muscles. They're a bit better now than they were when I trained about 5 years ago now. And I had huge bouts of imposter syndrome with it. I really struggled with the thought that I was good enough to tell people how to look after themselves when I didn't look like the social norm of what that needs to look like. But it didn't stop me, luckily. I managed to soldier on, and I managed to work nice and hard. I learned what I needed to learn, passed my exams, and came out on the other side. And it was when I was at personal trainer school, let's just call it that for fun, we was kind of like trying to decide on like our businesses, on what we was going to do and what we was going to call them. And this was at the time where Joe Wicks was kind of really up and coming, and he was starting to make some waves. Like, he'd released his first book and everyone was talking about him, and he was known as the body coach. And at the same time, I was listening to a book called Ignite the Fire by Jonathan Goodman, who is just the most phenomenal advice giver to the personal training business there probably is. And he runs the PTDC. And in Ignite the Fire, he says something like, you know, you need to give yourself a name that begins with the. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. He was like, the glute guy, Brett Contreras. You know, you're going to remember that. Brett Contreras, the glute guy. The sex doctor, like, you're going to remember that. Whatever it might be. And because I was starting out and because I was also scared of lifting weights, like at this point, I didn't even really know what a barbell was for, right? I felt very nervous and I kind of didn't want to commit to trying to compete with people who knew a lot more about lifting weights than I did and stuff like that and trying to be a personal trainer in that sense. And I passed one of the exams with flying colors, which was like our level two exams, and it was like introducing people to the gym, like inducting them, showing them how the machines work, talking to them about what they're after and what they're trying to achieve and things like that. And one day it just came to me, I wanted to call myself the gym starter, and that's where that came from. And then I wanted to do was take people from a place of pain, a place of inaction, to a place of action. And I wanted to make the gym a comfortable space. I forgot to tell you, during the interim of kind of like, as I was acting, as I was working at this job center, at the Excel center, and as I was trying to keep all of these things in the air and keep my acting career alive, I also ran theater schools. I built a business of 11 theater schools for primary school children or like elementary school children in the UK. And I owned 11 schools in Essex. They were called Bedazzled Performing Arts. And it was fun. It was hard work. It was really tough, but it was fun. And the kids were amazing. And similar to my experience at stage school, so kind of before I got to drama school, people often got picked to do things based on how good they were. Right. So, you know, the best singers would always get the most amount of songs at the show. And luckily I was an actor, so like I'd get quite good acting roles, but that was far less forthcoming at this stage school than the singing and the dancing was. And I thought it was very unfair because talent, someone never knows if they're talented until they're given the opportunity to prove it. And luckily I managed to be given that opportunity, but so many children in this world aren't given that opportunity. So many children in this world feel very pressured from the norms of society and what to do and what not to do and things like that. And I wanted to create a theatre school, and it also came from the fact that I was always picked last at sport. So whenever I was there to join a football team or whatever, I'd always be the last one, and I always thought I was better than that. Like, not better than that, but I could always do a job. Like, I was never that bad at sport, okay? I was never the best, but I was okay. But I'd always get picked last. Popularity contests were not my friends at school. I was bullied ridiculously at school. I then went on to become head boy. It's very strange. Like, I real polar opposites throughout my life. And so I just wanted to create a space where every child was created equal in a theatre school, in a talent-based setting. I didn't want little Susie, who can naturally sing or dance, to have any preference in terms of her abilities and how we as adults choose who does what on the stage. I didn't want her to have any preference above little Tommy, who is very scared, very nervous, and very worried. The quality of the show was irrelevant to me. It was the impact the show, because we did like a show once a year, and it was the impact that the show would have had on the participants. That's what mattered to me. So if Tommy, these aren't real kids, by the way, I'm just making these names up. If Tommy got as much from being able to deliver one line on that stage, and he was that scared about delivering one line, but that one line was as if he'd played the lead, then that would have been fine. And that's what I looked for. And that's how I decided who did what on stage at my stage schools. Because there's no point in bigging up someone if it comes naturally to them. If we only do what we're good at all of the time, we never develop and grow. And so it was important that the kids who didn't always get a look in got a look in, got a fair shot, got the opportunity to shine. And it was a real, it was incredible to just see some children just come out of nowhere and grow and develop over years. And it's scary now because sometimes I see them walking down the street and they're like in year 10 and 11. It's like, God, I got old quick. But it was incredible. It was just a really hard business to run and I had to sell it on and move on with my life. And that coincided with becoming a personal trainer. So I always wanted to build confidence in people. I wanted to take people from being in a place of pain to being in a place of success. And that's kind of where the mythology of the gym starter came from. I didn't want to be so bold as to say, I can transform your life. I didn't want to be so bold as to say, I will give you muscles and everything else. Because also, and anyone, any personal trainer who says that, who I can guarantee you will lose weight, I can guarantee you'll put on X amount of pounds or whatever, is flat out lying to you because it's out of their control. Us as personal trainers, we're gateways. We're not the solutions. All we do is try and unlock your mind and your body so that you can have the power to achieve what you want to achieve. My job is to empower you. Empower the fuck out of you. My job isn't, I can't do it for you. And that's a very crucial thing to understand. And that's all I've ever done throughout my life. Like when it came to acting, I was able to empower myself to be able to do it. When it came to, with the use of some very good coaches at drama school, when it came to my theatre scores, I wanted to create an environment where children who were as nervous as heck and needed help with their confidence, I wanted them to feel empowered. I wanted them to know that when they were in a Bedazzle Performing Arts class, they were in a safe space. They were as safe as houses and they could do anything they wanted and no one would judge them based on how they performed at all. And I've taken that attitude into personal training. I've taken that attitude into what I do as a coach and how I try and help people. And it's interesting to me in that my fate as an actor was to entertain people and to help people and to let people escape their lives. And through giving them entertainment and escapism, I felt like I was living up to my fate. And now as a personal trainer, it's very much the same. I feel like I'm in service to people, and that's a wonderful feeling. I feel like I'm helping people every single day, and I can't do more than that. And I feel like I'm repaying the chance God has given me, and that's really what gets me up in the morning. That's what makes me want to email all my clients every day. That's what makes me want to build the fitness collective. That's what makes me want to help people solve things. And you know what? Yeah, there's an element of selfishness to it as well because it pays me money. I enjoy that. It doesn't pay me a lot of money. I'm not going to lie. I'm not rich. But that doesn't matter because I am happy because I know I'm in service to some of the most amazing people I've ever come across. You know, I mean, I've worked with Knights of the Realm. I've worked with Oscar winners. Yet my clients who I speak to, who become real friends of mine. And everyone who comes across me is a dear friend to me. They're incredible people. And the way in which I look at them in amazement because the way in which they deal with everything in their lives compared to what I have to figure out, I'm in utter awe of who they are, how hard they work, what they do, and how they go about doing it. And if you are one of those friends listening to this, then all I have is the biggest amount of respect for you, as well as the biggest amount of gratitude for you to be in my life. And I think a lot of people think the client gets from the personal trainer. So, for instance, like, you know, the client comes to the personal trainer and the personal trainer tells them how to do the things and off they go, da-da-da-da-da. So, like, the client is the one taken, but it's just not true with me. Like, I get so much out of my relationship with my clients. They become my best friends. It comes to the point where I start feeling guilty about taking money off of them because I'm like, I don't want to take money off my mates. Like, I, 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 honestly, if I could help everybody for free, I really would, just because I don't feel like I should get paid for it, because that's not why I do it. And so I'm now a personal trainer. I try and live with this sense of helping people and entertaining people and making a change into people's lives and doing some good for people and allowing that good to take root in them. And if I can impact them in any way, shape or form, then I'm very happy. And it's hard work. It's not easy. It doesn't always go the way you want it to go. And you have to keep changing tack, trying, helping, and everything else. And so I hope when I get to the pearly gates, I hope God can look me in the eye and say, "Ah, you did all right. You did okay. You're right. I kept you alive for a reason, and that reason seemed to make sense. And I'm glad I chose you." That's kind of how I live my life. And I hope one day he can turn around and say that to me. I hope he can say that to me about my future family and the way I bring them up in this world. And I hope he can say that about the way in which I deal with my professional life as well. Because that's really all it's about. Basically, I'm trying to make God, the ultimate parent, proud of me. That's all I'm doing. And now it's 2021 and it's been 5 years. I'm 5 years into personal training. I've worked in the gym, on the floor. I used to do like hours and hours and hours. I've probably worked every single day of my life for the last 5-6 years for at least 3 or 4 hours a day. Most days it's been more like 14 or 15 hours a day, jumping from job to job to job to job, building businesses, working as a personal trainer, communicating with clients, working at the Excel Center. I've done it all. And it took me a long time to become a full-time personal trainer. A long, long time. It didn't happen overnight. And in fact, now I'm going through another challenge, because I decided on the 17th of December 2019 that I was moving to Australia to be with my gorgeous fiance. And as you know now, I'm sat in my hotel room in quarantine here in Australia. It took a year for us to get here. And I get out in a week's time. And I'm very excited because I haven't seen my fiance for 9 months. So because of COVID, and she had to come home and stuff like that. So the future is really bright. The future seems like it's full of opportunity to me right now. And at the start of a year, I think it's a lovely feeling for me to have. But it's also a feeling I hope you have as well. I hope that you can... 2020 was a tough year for everybody. And it doesn't matter if it was tougher for me or tougher for you, or it's irrelevant. We all had to get through it in our own individual ways. And in all fairness, I'm not sure... I don't think any of us are sure when it's going to relent, when it's going to let up. And so as we enter 2021, I just hope that you can find gratitude for yourselves this year. You can understand that there is a new beginning with each day that comes and each year that passes, each month that passes. And that can very much, that gives you a new opportunity. Every day that you wake up, you are literally given a new chance to create what you want to create. And it doesn't always go the right way. Trust me, I've had many failures in my life. I probably have been to 5,000 auditions in my life, and I can count the amount of jobs I've had on two hands. Like, maybe not 5,000, that's quite a lot. But I've been to an awful lot of auditions in my life, and I've faced an awful lot of rejection in my life. But each day, every day that sun comes up, it's another chance. For me, every day that sun comes up, it's God going, your mum's not going to have to sign that paperwork. Or it's your mum's not going to have to sue the hospital. It's for me, every time the sun comes up, it's me waking up as a little baby after my heart operation. And that opportunity shouldn't be lost on you. You have more power within you than you might be aware that is possible. I don't know where my confidence comes from, and I don't know why I'm endowed with it as much as I am. But one thing it has taught me is that when anybody puts their mind to something well enough, they can achieve whatever they want. I sit here as a 33-year-old man. I sit here as a 33-year-old man, having seen so many people, whether they be children, adults, personal friends, change and develop so much in their lives and create and achieve so much. And all of us are unique, and all of us are so beautifully ordinary, and that is our true power. For a long time, I thought I'd be in Hollywood. For a long time, I thought I'd be winning BAFTAs and Oscars, and I know that might sound terse to you, but I had to have that belief in order to succeed. But really and truly, what's made me feel more successful in my life than anything I've ever achieved in my acting career is just being a normal, ordinary personal trainer and helping real, ordinary people just improve their lives just a little bit. And if you're listening to this, you have that power as well. You have that power not only to change your life, but you have that power to change the lives of those around you. You should never, ever underestimate your power to inspire others, and especially your power to inspire yourselves. I can't believe what I've managed to do in my life. I can't believe how grateful I am that I've managed to become a personal trainer and actually find some people who like me enough to want my help. And it's something that I'll always be grateful for, and I will always try hard to stay true to, stay grounded with, and to make sure that I am always and forever in service to that, and in service to my parent upstairs. He decided one day in 1987 or maybe 88, no, it was 87, to keep me here, to help you, basically. So yeah, that's it. That's kind of my story. It's kind of my belief system as well, I suppose. And I suppose the two go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. And I'm sure it will change. I'm sure it will develop as I get older. I've got to face heart surgery again at some point in the future, which is a very scary thought because I'll have a memory of it this time. It's quite easy when you don't remember it. And so we shall see. But I'm here in Australia now, looking forward to starting my life. And in many ways, I feel like I'm starting a bit late. Like I'm at 33 years old. I'll be 34 in a couple of weeks' time. And I'm not married. I don't have any children yet. And a lot of my friends say to me, do you not wish you'd have done it earlier? Like, do you not wish you'd have got there earlier? And I'm like, well, not really. Because if I'd got there earlier, I wouldn't be in such a great position. And I wouldn't be with the people I am with now in order to create my life in this manner. And it's never too late. Every decision you've ever made in your life makes it a success because that's what brought you here. And that's really important to remember. Even if you're struggling, even if you're still looking for the answer to weight loss, to fitness, to muscle gain, to whatever it might be, every decision you've made, it's not been a waste of time because it's what's led you to having this in your ears. It's what's led you to seeking out more help in a way that resonates with you, in a way that you think is going to help you. So always remember that. Don't look on the past as a failure. I could look on my acting career as a failure. I easily could, and people do when they find out about it on social media. They're always slating me, calling me a failed actor. Yeah, maybe, but I achieve more than I ever hoped to achieve. I achieve more than most people achieve. And I feel very much the same about my personal training. And every decision that I've made to move forward with has helped me get here. And it's going to help you get there too. Don't look back on your past as a failing. Only look back on it as something you went through to get to where you're at now. And that's a much more empowering thought for you. So that's it. I'm Adam Berry. I'm known as the Gym Starter. I now live in Australia on the Gold Coast. And hopefully I'm going to get married soon as well. But yeah, and if you have got to the end of this and think, that guy sounds like he's got something about him, then thank you very much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. I train people online now. I'm a one-to-one personal trainer online. Or you can get some group training from me if you join something called the Fitness Collective. And you kind of get the biggest resource of fitness, I think, that might exist on the internet, of helpful content, of workouts, of yoga recipes. Not yoga recipes, of yoga workouts, of recipes, of gym-based workouts, bodyweight workouts. You name it, it's in there. And if it's not, tell me and I'll create it for you. And that's who I am, and that's what I'm about. And the fitness solution in 2021, this podcast, I'm really hoping will go even further, get even stronger. I'll get even better guests on, although that will be very difficult because the guests I've had on this podcast are amazing. And if you haven't gone through the back catalogue, please do, because honestly, the conversations we have are astounding. And the people that have, for some reason, have come to me and have been willing to be on my podcast is truly, it's a real honor. And I can't believe I've got some of them on here. People like Jordan Syatt, Susan Niebergall, Mike Matthews, James Dunn, who else? Dave Cottrell, Brooke Medigan, Jody Walker. Just the list goes on and on, and it's going to get better and better. I've got some great guests lined up, and I'm very much looking forward to being your host on this podcast, and yeah, that's about it. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions about my story and about who I am, then please feel free to ask. If you like the podcast, please like and subscribe. That means an awful lot to me as well, and I hope 2021 brings you everything that you hope it's going to bring you. I hope you enjoy every second of it. And I truly hope that you just wake up each day with a new sense of purpose, with a renewed energy and gratitude in your heart that you have another chance to make the day a success. Thanks for being here. I'll chat to you again very, very soon. Peace, love, and protein. High fives and protein.